Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi friends, we want to thank, as usual, our patrons. Thank you so much to those of you who've pledged $2 and $5, that's US, don't forget, every month, which helps us to create this independent podcast. We have a lot of exciting stuff coming up and you will be the first to know, you patrons. We have our first Ask Me Anything episode coming up on Patreon, but also we'll be doing a live one where we'll be able to communicate with you live streaming. Very cool. Amanda Boyd, Janelle Mowat, Anna Harris, Elise Hutchinson, with an N, Gemma Jo Johnson, what a great name, Kath, Jessica Moyle, Matthew Irving, Martina Urzarski, another good name, Emma Collins, Johnny, J-O-N-N-I, I love that, that's a rock star's name, Moors Hatcher, Courtney Whitaker, Fiona Pemberton, Janet Campbell, Donna Artvilla, Rebecca Barrett, Jessica Orr, Georgina Woods, and Maria Efkarpidis. You knew that was going to happen, didn't you, Maria? Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who writes us and says, I didn't get a shout out. I love that. I just think that's great. So don't ever hesitate to do that if we don't give you a shout out. Because, you know, my admin's terrible. We have people helping us with admin now, but, you know, mistakes happen. So thank you, patrons.
Please be advised this podcast contains descriptions of graphic violence and is not appropriate for children.
Megan Norris was one of our very first guests on Australian True Crime. In episode 3, she spoke to us about her excellent book On Father's Day, in which she tells the story of Cindy Gambino, whose ex-husband, Robert Farquharson, murdered their 3 sons, Jay, Tyler and Bailey, by driving them into a dam on Father's Day in 2005. Megan is the only author to have interviewed Cindy, and they spent many, many hours together in the weeks, months and years after the event, as Cindy moved from supporting Robert and believing his story about a coughing fit causing a terrible accident to coming to terms with the fact that he'd planned and carried out the murder of her children to punish her for leaving him. It's an intimate and harrowingly close observation of a woman accepting the unacceptable.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers how people become victims, and what happens next.
In today's episode, Megan joins Emily Webb and Vicky Petratis to discuss a Queensland case she's been following, that of a so-called black widow, Patricia Byers.
I think why I find her so intriguing is she looks so normal, you know? I think when I was covering courts, that was always the thing that struck me in horrible cases, really horrific cases, is that often the person in the dock you could sit next to on the tram. You would chat with her in the shops. She looked so normal, and she was really, really scheming and manipulating and conniving and dangerous. How can an apparently harmless, ordinary-looking young woman be so wicked?
And who is she, Megan? Who is Patricia Byers? Where is she from? When was she sort of doing her crimes?
Well, Patricia Byers was an insurance agent when her final victim met her. She was from the Brisbane area in Queensland, and she was working as an insurance agent when she met her work mentor, a guy called John Asquith. John Asquith was a comfortably off insurance broker, very experienced, charming, lovely man, and he became a bit of a mentor for Patricia. So if she had questions, she was fairly new to the job, he would help her. She was very charming, very charismatic, and very dangerous. And he didn't know that. And he found that out to his cost. And what had happened was when he met Patricia Byers, she was in a relationship with a man called Carol Gotchens. And Carol Gotchens had left his former wife to live with Patricia Byers. They'd formed a relationship. And they lived in a very nice house in Yatala, which is not far from the Gold Coast. And she had a comfortable life. He was a marine engineer, so he was travelling quite a bit, and he'd got a luxury boat, and he was very well off. And he suddenly left her, and she told John this at work that she was heartbroken. She called him one night heartbroken that Carol had left her, apparently for a Thai woman, and had gone off to live in Thailand to start a new life. It was very, very sudden. And no one really questioned it. She telephoned John that night, who was her work mentor, very upset, saying, could I come around to your place? Carol's left me for another woman. And he said, of course. And she stayed the night. She was very upset. And he said, the following morning, she got up like nothing had happened and put her best foot forward and went off to work. He really admired her for that, that she'd showed this resilience, that she was determined to, you know, onward and upward, and off she went to work. And about a week later, he called around at her house to see if she was okay. And she was putting down a patio in the backyard and putting up a pergola. She had tradesmen everywhere, and they were pouring concrete for a patio, which he thought, this is wonderful. She's moving on with her life. This is fantastic. After a little while, their friendship blossomed into something more, and they became lovers. And John, who was a little older than her, moved into the house at Yatala that she had once shared with Carol Gotchens. And Carol Gotchens apparently had been very fond of Trish, even though he apparently called the relationship off. And he'd left her the house, he'd left her his luxury boat, and actually in his resignation to his employer, a sudden out-of-the-blue resignation before he went off to Thailand, he'd written a letter saying what a great catch Trish was. You know, he'd probably regret what he was doing, leaving her, because she was such a great catch, and she wouldn't be on the shelf for long because someone would snap her up and he'd probably regret it. It was a very odd resignation letter, which became very clear with hindsight why that was, because he hadn't written it, she had. Anyway, John takes up with Trish, and on the weekend of the, I think it was the Easter weekend in 1993, they went off on Carol's boat. Now, John isn't much of a boaty guy, but Trish Byers was one of those hands-on, can-do-anything, determined sorts of people. And she was very good with the boat. So she took them out for the day on Easter Sunday off to Moreton Bay. And they were cruising around the shallow waters between Peel and Moreton Islands. And suddenly, apparently, the boat had a bit of engine trouble. And she said, we'd better pull over and anchor because I've got problems with the engine. So they pulled over in a fairly sort of tranquil but remote part of Moreton Bay where there was no one else around. And John said, I'll take the jet ski and I'll go back to Moreton Island and get someone to come and help and fix the engine. And she said, no, don't worry about that. We don't need to do that. I can fix the engine. You won't get anyone anyway at Easter to come and help, but I'll fix the engine. And if I can't fix it, we'll just stay and have a romantic night on board beautiful luxury boat that had belonged to Carol Gottschens. So that's what they did. So John put on the barbecue, they had drinks, they made love, they came back on the deck with late night drinks and they watched the sun go down. He said it was really romantic, absolutely perfect end to a beautiful day, except that it wasn't going to be. So he went off to bed early and said, I'm going to turn in now. Went downstairs into the bed downstairs. And she said she would follow. What happened was he remembers waking up with a jolt, sitting up in bed and feeling warm moisture on his head. He put his hand to his head and it was blood. And he said he felt very sluggish. It was like registering everything in slow motion. He could feel this blood and he wondered if he'd sat up and banged his head on the side of the boat, the wooden casing on the boat. So he felt his head and instantly felt the bed to see where if Trish was okay. She wasn't there. So he daggered upstairs in a bit of a daze onto the deck, looking for her, calling her name, and he could hear groans. So he follows the sound of groaning and finds Trish sprawled on the deck, saying that they'd been attacked by pirates. And we're talking of Queensland's Moreton Bay. So, you know, from parts of Moreton Bay, you can see the city skyline of Brisbane. You know, the idea of pirates on Moreton Bay is quite unbelievable.
Vicky, what are you thinking as you're
hearing
Megan?
Every true crime fan in the country is going to be saying, did they check for the body under the patio? The minute you hear anyone concretes or does any kind of construction right after a missing person, we're just thinking, okay, the patio.
Vicky and I did look at each other and I thought, nothing good can come when you're talking about a patio and concreting, can it?
No, except that John didn't think they were dealing with a missing person. He thought she was a very strong, feisty woman getting on with her gardening and finishing their renovation and getting on with her life after being dumped by the love rat.
And obviously a very convincing, very manipulative woman.
Very convincing indeed. With hindsight, he says that now, but he had no reason to doubt it. And he actually moved into the home where Carol Gottschens had lived with Pat Byers. He moved into the home and slept in the same, he didn't sleep in the same bed as Carol Gottschens, because strangely, after Carol Gottschens, the supposed love rat, took off on her, the only thing she claimed he took was the bed to Thailand.
So suspicious.
On a plane to Thailand, he'd taken the bed. Anyway, she did buy a brand new bed, which would later become quite a key thing. But at the time, John thought nothing of that either. You know, she got a new bed and a nice new patio. Anyway, but Moreton Bay, it's very close to the city. You know, you can catch the ferry and go over to Moreton Bay for the day. You can get there in 45 minutes. So it's fairly suburban. So
no pirates.
No pirates.
John hears this, but John is very dazed. And in a minute, I'll explain why. But he says, I'm going to ring the Coast Guard. So she's like moaning on the deck, lying on the deck, moaning where she's been attacked by pirates. John, whose head is bleeding, but he doesn't know why yet, he goes to the radio and he tries to radio the Coast Guard for help. But someone had done something to the radio. And the radio wasn't working. So the Coast Guards could hear John. He could not hear them. So he wasn't sure if they were getting his message at all. You know, he was just on this radio saying, help, help, we've been attacked by pirates, and trying to say where they were. And the Coast Guards, sort of trying to find out where they were, looked at each other and thought, pirates on Moreton Bay. Quite unbelievable. They'd never heard of pirates on Moreton Bay. They wondered if it might be teenagers or something, you know, jumping on someone's boat, you know, stealing things. So the Coast Guard heads out into the dark waters of Moreton Bay looking for this stranded boat where pirates have boarded it. John did say, I think I saw a rifle. I think I saw a shotgun on the deck. But he was rambling because he was injured. So the Coast Guards board the boat. They find John with this terrible head injury. Pat Byers lying on the deck without a mark after being brutally assaulted by pirates and knocked up supposedly unconscious. So she'd been lying there groaning. And they take them both back to Moreton Bay. But before they go, the boat has become a crime scene. So they're looking for the rifle, the shotgun that John had described in his phone call. And there was no shotgun to be seen. So they're taken back to Moreton Bay, where a doctor opens the surgery in the middle of the night and examines John's head and says, there's gunpowder residue around this wound. And John says, what do you mean? He said, well, you've been shot in the head. So he's immediately taken. He's rushed to Brisbane, where he's taken to one of the big hospitals there. While he's undergoing surgery to remove bullet fragments from his brain, Tricia Byers is being interviewed by the police, and she's sticking to her bizarre story. You know, no, I can't really tell you what happened. It all happened so quickly. Pirates boarded the boat. They must have shot John and attacked me, and I don't remember anything else. But they're looking at her without a mark on her, and they're already very suspicious. The shotgun, they ask the Coast Guards, the shotgun has gone. They go back to the crime scene. There is no shotgun, and they're highly suspicious. He's been shot in the head in the middle of the night, in the middle of Moreton Bay. The only other person on the boat was Patricia Byers, and she's in their sights. But they have no evidence to link her to it. So they basically start to dig. And it's the usual motive. What is her motive? If it's her, why? So they go through John's affairs and they discover that there are a number of insurance policies taken out on his life where the signature has been forged. It's not John's signature at all, although it looks very like John's signature. And the person who stands to inherit all the wealth, if anything should befall John, is Tricia Byers. So they go to the hospital bed and they show John these policies and say, do you recognize these policies? And he said, no. Well, is that your signature? And he looks closely and he says, no, I've never seen these before. And they're then saying, well, we believe the only person who stands to benefit is Tricia Byers, that she may be behind this. And he won't have it. He can't bear to hear it. He refuses to believe that the woman he loves could be capable of such a terrible thing. So they say, well, if you're going to be discharged from hospital, our investigation is ongoing. You cannot go home with her. You must not go home with her. So he goes to his mother's to stay. And while he's there, the police continue to dig. And lo and behold, the home in Yatala is close to Logan River or the Coomera River. And the next door neighbor's son, who's out fishing, reels in a barrel of a shotgun, a sawn-off shotgun. It's been shortened. They match it to wood shavings on Patricia Byers, the handy woman, hands-on, can-do-anything woman. They find matching wood shavings on the bench, on her workbench in her garage, which matches the sawn-off barrel of the shotgun. So the net's beginning to close. But she's not done yet. She has persuaded John to invest in a fish and chip shop business. So she keeps calling around, you know, and he's saying to himself, she couldn't possibly have done this to me. And she's taking him coffee and bacon and egg rolls, which are laced with huge amounts of Valium. So she watches him drink the coffee. The first time he drinks the coffee, spits it out and says, that is so bitter. And she said, oh, give it here, and throws it down the sink. Comes back a few days later with coffee and a bacon and egg roll, again laced with Valium, which she watches him eat it. And then he feels very, very strange and very tired. So she says, go and sleep it off in the car. So he sleeps in the car for something like 4 hours straight. And then he goes home feeling very drowsy. And he's staying with a friend and the friend is very bothered. And the friend says, who are you with? What have you eaten? And the friend is panicking. The friend sends John straight to the GP, where the GP performs blood tests. And these are performed the following morning. And the blood tests show huge amounts of Valium, enough to kill a horse. So he rings the police and says, okay, she's trying to poison me. I accept that you're telling the truth. Anyway, they eventually arrest her, but they couldn't prove that she put that in the roll. Anyway, she's arrested trying to steal money off John. So she's gone to his workplace, stolen a check, or deposited a check she's stolen into her own bank account. She's eventually charged and stands trial for attempted murder at the Brisbane Supreme Court. So she's standing trial for murder, and there's a lot of publicity surrounding the murder. And reading that publicity are the daughters of Carol Gotchins in Sydney. And they're saying, the alarm bells are now ringing. Our father went to live in Thailand. You know, they'd rung her after Carol's sudden disappearance to Thailand to build a new life, and they haven't heard from him since. They report this to the police. So while Patricia Byers is jailed for attempting to murder John, and by the way, her defense was that he did it himself, that he was in on a plot to cash in on his own death. It was a scam to cheat the insurance companies out of money. I don't know how he was going to manage that, which of course he always denied. But she was found guilty of attempted murder. While she's sent off to jail, the police are digging and opening a fresh investigation into Carol Gotchins. And they find that he has bought a ticket to Thailand but he never boarded his flight to Thailand. They speak to his girlfriend in Thailand, who said she waited for hours at the airport in Thailand, but he never arrived. And when she called his home, Tricia Byers said he changed his mind. Basically, they speak to Carol Gottschalk's former boss, who had this very strange resignation letter that says Trish is a marvelous catch and won't be on the shelf for long. And they're really digging now. And given that the motive behind John's attempted murder was money, they start to trawl through Carol's affairs, and they find out that basically she's forged signatures on documents, leaving all Carol's estates to her, transferring all his assets into her name, and has disappeared off the face of the earth. So they go back to the house. That, remember, John has moved in and he's been there for a couple of years and it's been repainted. They go back to the house and they've got this luminol. They're looking at for blood spatters. And lo and behold, they find blood spatters on the wall and the floor in Carol Gottken's former bedroom, close to the bed where John had been sleeping. So whatever happened to Carol Gottschalk, you'd have to assume, must have happened in that room.
After the break, the extraordinary past of Patricia Byers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, an unlikely healing for a victim and a possible release date for a black widow, as we pick up the story of Patricia Byers with journalist and author Megan Norris.
So the blood is tested and it turns out to be a DNA match to Gottschalk's daughter's. So she's brought out of prison and interviewed, denies knowing anything about this, and is arrested, this time with murder.
And Megan, how long had Carol been missing for at this stage?
He'd been missing for about 4 years.
When you mentioned that the daughters, it raised alarm bells, you sort of wonder what was going on in the background with the daughters not hearing from their dad and wondering what was happening.
Well, they did. They rang Tricia Byers to find out, and she said she didn't know. He'd left her. He'd just left her. She did claim she'd had a phone call from him and he was fine. He just wanted to live his new life. It was all very unlikely. You know, had John not survived to tell the tale, and she didn't expect that he would, then there wouldn't have been the publicity surrounding the trial, and that wouldn't have brought Carol Gottschalk's daughters forward, and maybe she would have got away with two perfect murders. So what happened is she never admitted to murdering Carol Gottschalk. She denied it for many years. She was found guilty of murdering him, and she was jailed for life for that offence. So she's in jail for a crime she's claiming she didn't commit. Whilst in jail, she'd continued to drag John back to court. She wasn't done with him. She dragged him back to court and accused him of all sorts. She objected to his crime compensation payout.
Wow, she's cold.
So she lodged a case against that. And by the time he was awarded, you know, he kept his compensation, but had spent it all on legal bills. Fighting her, he had hardly anything left. So this went on and on. And he's told the police, this is what's happened to Carol. I believe he was murdered in the bedroom and that his remains are underneath the patio at the house in Yatala. Now, the police dug up a concrete shed base. They looked all around the property. They looked in the river. They looked everywhere. Carol Gotchins' body to this day has never been found. But no one has ever looked under the patio at Yatala. And, you know, these days, I know in the Louise Bell case, the missing girl case in Adelaide, the police actually went to a former home of a suspect using sort of X-ray equipment to
The ground-penetrating radar is popular, isn't it?
And they were using this sort of X-raying, penetrating equipment to determine. They actually found the remains of a dog or a pet. They didn't find Louise. But that's never been done in this case. In jail in Brisbane, she in the correctional centre there, she did a degree in law. Very smart woman. Very smart. And very manipulating, very conniving. And she managed to wangle herself a transfer to Adelaide because that's where her son lives. So she said she wanted to be close to her son. That raised a lot of suspicion up here in Queensland because at the time she wangled that transfer, Queensland had a nobody, no parole law. So offenders that don't reveal the whereabouts of the body of their victim can't apply for parole. So Adelaide didn't have that at the time. So Patricia Byers manages to wangle a transfer to a prison in Adelaide, where unfortunately for her, they brought the same rule in there too.
I had never heard of that before. I read it in one of the accounts of this case. I'd never heard of the no body, no parole.
I think in Victoria it was brought in recently.
It is, for things like the Daniel Morecambe case, you know, so that rule exists now. But Patricia Byers, by coincidence, just conveniently managed to wangle herself a transfer to South Australia when they didn't have that rule and made an application for parole that failed. But now she is expected to make a new application for parole, but they do now have the no body, no parole rule. When they brought that rule in, I think it was in 2015 or 2014 in Adelaide, she immediately confessed to Carol Gotchins' murder. Okay, I did it. It was me. And she came up with this story about how he died. According to Trish Byers, it was a crime of passion committed in a car park behind the Beanley pub. And that they'd been having an argument, presumably about him leaving her. And she had picked up a machete and hit him on the head. And he had fallen into the Logan River and been swept away, never to be seen again. Now, the forensics from Yatala tell a very different story. So John's saying, look, she's not even telling the truth now. He says she's the most manipulating liar he's ever known, the most convincing, charismatic woman he's ever known. And she's still lying even now, which shows she's got no remorse. She's not allowing Carol Gotchins' family to say goodbye to him or to know what really happened to him. Basically, she's not sorry. And she shouldn't be allowed to be released.
When is she likely to be released, Megan, if it happens?
Well, if she is successful this year and makes another bid for parole and is successful any day.
Oh, wow. And so she's 73 now?
Yes, I think she's in her 70s now.
And you're still dangerous at 73 if you're following that pattern.
Well, John believes so because she never admitted that she attempted to murder him, even though it was clear she did, and all the evidence said she did. She's never really admitted that she killed Carol Gotchins. Only now, in order to get parole, has she admitted it. And even that story doesn't add up with the police's forensic investigation or their investigation. It's very clear he's been murdered for his money. And Carol Gotchins' daughters have since lodged a very big case before the Supreme Court in Brisbane after she was jailed for their father's murder and had a very protracted battle. And they had all their father's assets transferred out of her name back into theirs. And she fought that.
And that's including the house where he died?
Including the house, including the boat. It's all been transferred back into their name. It's since been sold. But she still did that. She still fought it. So she's narcissistic, you know, this narcissistic woman who refuses to admit to the crimes that she's committed. And when she does, she tells a half-hearted story that brings no comfort to the victim's family and doesn't allow them to say goodbye. You know, the police said in the case of John Asquith, she had planned it meticulously. She had disabled the radio. She had prepared that shotgun in advance in her workshop, shortening the barrel. And do you know how John survived? It's quite incredible. She made a terrible mistake by shortening that shotgun. She shortened the shotgun, but used the wrong bullets. And what happened? She shot John in the head while he slept at point blank range in the dark. And when she pulled the trigger, because it was the wrong bullet, it shattered. It shattered in the barrel. So John had fragments of lead and still has fragments of lead in his brain. You know, they removed what they could, but it's still there. And he's got a massive, massive wound on his head still to this day. But had she used the correct bullets, he would not have survived to tell the tale. And she didn't know that. That mistake proved very, very costly.
And I love that the neighbour fishing found the gun. I think as a crime writer, you hear this over and over again, that you get these accidental bits of evidence that it's like, I don't know, it's probably fanciful to say justice wants to be done. And so for someone to be fishing and randomly find that gun that contributed to her conviction, I love stories like that.
And, you know, what were the chances? What was the chance he would survive being shot in the head at close range? She'd gone, waited for him to go to bed. You have to wonder if there really was engine trouble. And if there was, had she tinkered with the engine to make it stop where it did? The radio didn't work when he tried to call for help, except that, unfortunately for her, it worked enough that they could hear him, even though he couldn't hear them. And then he remembers about the patio. But he's very puzzled as to why that patio has never been scanned or dug up. And I was so intrigued, I actually Googled the house and it was for sale recently. And I just felt I need to go up with some x-ray machinery and do a bit of DIY. There's got to be something under there. But you wouldn't think if there was a lot of blood. And remember, 4 years later, they found blood spatters. Yeah. 4 years. And she painted it.
Hopefully the power of the podcast might mean that, you know, that's if there's some pressure, we've seen that happen in recent cases.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I want to say it then. I want to ask the Queensland Police, hey, why aren't you looking at that patio?
That's an official request from Megan Norris. So will John's victim impact statement have some weight when it comes to Trisha's parole application?
He has written a letter. And look, he lives in fear. He lives in fear. Well, I guess when the unthinkable happens, anything's possible. He lives in fear, not that she... if she were to get out, that she would harm him herself. She may not be prepared to get her hands dirty second time around. He lives in fear of her cleverness and her ability to convince people to do things. He said, who knows who she's met in prison? She's very convincing. You know, who knows? He lives in hiding.
We see that over and over again, don't we? When victims, they trust somebody so much, and he even trusted her after it happened, that they lose faith not only in the perpetrator, but they lose faith in their own radar. So if he says, I can't trust my own radar because it failed me twice and I nearly died both times. And I find that that's a combination of fear of her and fear of their own internal ability to protect themselves.
Oh, totally. And I think you find it more with partners, where it's partner type stuff. You know, he slept next to this woman. He loved this woman. He thought she loved him. What did he miss? What was he doing when she was preparing that shotgun? Was he sitting upstairs watching TV? What's wonderful about this ending for John, though, if there is a wonderful ending? I said, how did you ever learn to trust anyone again? And he said, I did. Sometime after the case, he met another woman, an older woman, and he fell in love. And he said she was everything that Trisha wasn't. She was down to earth. She was kindly. She wasn't ambitious. She was just decent. And he said, I learned to love and trust again. And I never, ever thought that would be possible. And sadly, his partner passed away of sepsis out of the blue. And she died suddenly. And to this day, can't talk about her without emotion. You know, very upset even to talk about her, because he said, she helped me to heal. And I never thought that was possible. He's still a very damaged man.
Yeah, and it's important to look at the human side of it, because we can often become focused on these, you know, the black widow types and the manipulative criminals. But, you know, behind them, they leave these broken people who hopefully can survive and thrive, but they don't always.
They don't. And he says the good thing about his survival, apart from the fact that he's still here, is that he said, if I hadn't survived, if she had done to me what she intended to do and gotten away with it, no one would have looked at Carol Gotkins. No one would have looked at that case. And who knows, there may have been others later. Because he doesn't believe people like Trish stop. He thinks it was of greed and power. And I believe that. I think there was an element of revenge with Carol Gotkins, that he was leaving her. And if he'd have left her, he wouldn't have left her all his money and his house and his boat. So this way she gets the rich pickings and goes on to abuse the man and attempt to kill the man who was her work mentor and helped her through a hard time. So I think that's what fascinates me. I'm looking at a picture of her right now. I've called a photo up in front of me. And she just looks so ordinary.
She does, doesn't she?
And she is so dangerous. And I believe she is completely dangerous because she's shown no remorse, no empathy. She's never apologized. She's never really told the truth. And with that sort of ego and that sort of narcissistic personality and that ability to manipulate men, I think she remains a danger to men. I think the feeling with Gotkins is that he was, well, no one really will ever know, you know, what's happened to him. And she claims that he was swept away in the Logan River, never to be seen again. Like, seriously. I guess it's as unlikely as pirates in Moreton Bay.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah.
But when you think about that, they think that it was a blunt trauma type. The blood spatter tells a different right. story. You know, with forensics, it tells a different story. Given it had been painted, you know, and John said he could have been murdered in bed. It looks like a blunt force trauma of some kind, head trauma. No one will ever really know. But John said it chills him that he slept in the bed. And that's the other thing the police looked at. The original bed disappeared, presumably because it would have held forensic evidence.
It would have been blood-soaked, you'd think.
I wonder where that bed went.
To the tip.
To the tip.
I'm betting it was burned or something.
Or under the patio.
Under the patio. I was saying the same thing. Even the confession, the so-called confession, it's just another way of manipulating the system. She's managed to manipulate them enough to move her to Adelaide, you know, and now she's manipulating again. Her son says she's confessed to a murder she didn't commit because she wants parole. John says she's confessed to a murder she did commit because she wants parole.
I feel so sorry for the families because to admit that your mum did that means that you have to admit that your whole life is a lie and that your own trust is misplaced. I just feel for the people that are caught up in the web of people that don't play by the rules.
That's right, especially not just the victim's family but the family members of the perpetrator. They are often not supported and victims too.
That's true. And I think obviously supporting his mum and would like to see her released. I'm sure he would. But John says, when there's no remorse, you've got to say that, don't you? Where there's no remorse, he's never had an apology in all these years. She still maintains she didn't do it. And it was an insurance scam. And actually, the Gotkins case was the biggest ever forgery case in Australia.
Really?
Yes, it was the biggest ever forgery investigation and forgery case. It was all tied up in the murder, but it was a murder forgery case, the biggest ever forgery case in Australia.
Is that because of the amounts that she was after?
No, it was the amount of forgery, the trail, the paper trail. And it was complex and they had handwriting experts and they had, you know, even the letter of resignation that Carol Gotkins supposedly sent to his boss saying that Trish was a wonderful catch and wouldn't be on the shelf for very long, it was typed on a typewriter belonging to Trish Beyer. So, you know, it was a very strange resignation saying, why am I leaving this wonderful woman? Of course, it was written by her.
Yeah.
That's why it was alluding to I'm making a terrible mistake. You know, she probably thought he was making a terrible mistake leaving her and therefore he paid for it with his life.
It's another incredible case from you, Megan. Are you in any contact with any of the people in this case? Does John keep a pretty low profile in terms of speaking to people?
He keeps a very low profile. He is very damaged and he lives a very quiet life. And when I went to see him, he was very specific before he agreed to talk to me that I would not disclose his whereabouts because he is very fearful because she did make threats against him. She kept dragging him to court in this battle over his crimes comp. Imagine you shoot someone in the head and then say he doesn't deserve crimes compensation.
Why did she have a say in that?
She contested it. It's bizarre. And she took him to court for other things. It all got a bit bogged down, but you know, she fought that. Because she's a narcissist and she took him to court and she made sure that he spent all his money on legal bills, which he did.
That's disgraceful that you can actually do that, though. Like, a perpetrator can contest the victims of crime compensation.
Well, she contested, even after she was found guilty of the murder of Carol Gotchens, she contested his daughter's claim on his estate.
That's horrible.
And, you know, all they were doing were fighting to have that returned. And that was a very protracted legal battle. And again, that was a massive forgery case. So it was one of the biggest forensic forgery investigations in Australia.
The only thing that we can hope for is that every time we get a case like this, that the next time it's a bit easier, you know, that legal reforms happen in the meantime to say, no, that shouldn't happen.
Yes, it shouldn't happen. And John, he's very sad that the woman that he met and fell in love with, he met so late in his life. He said that, you know, it's a double-edged sword. If he hadn't met her, he would never have learned to love and trust again. He did find love in his later years. He's an older man now, in his late 70s, but he found love in his later years, and it was rewarding love, and it was the kind of love he wished he'd found earlier. He can't bear to look at the photo of himself with Trish Byrd. There's a very disturbing photo of himself with Trish Byrd where they're smiling at a black tie event. He looks happy and she looks so harmless. And she represented herself in a lot of these cases too. You know, she's got a law degree now, paid for by the taxpayers whilst in jail.
Gosh, well, you'll be keeping a close eye on this case.
I am keeping a close eye. I'll be very interested to see if she does actually put a parole bid in. And John, of course, is contesting it. He says that, you know, he's living a life sentence. He wasn't supposed to be here. And had she had her way, he wouldn't be here. He believes she poses a threat to men and will continue to do so. So we'll have to wait and see. But I am watching that space with great interest. I'd be very interested to see if they decide. And he said, she is so manipulating. She will convince people she's reformed. But how can you be rehabilitated if you don't have remorse? I met someone once who said that I heard of Trish Byrd. My ears immediately prick up, you know. And she said, I knew her for years. She was lovely. She was so lovely. I can't believe it. She was so lovely. And I'm thinking, yes, and that's why she was so good at what she did.
Yeah.
She could be anyone you wanted her to be.
That's Megan Norris talking with Emily Webb and Vicky Petratis. Megan's excellent book, Look What You Made Me Do, Fathers Who Kill, is available for purchase through the bookshop on our website, australiantruecrimepodcast.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Australian True Crime, the live show, is coming.